Today on Renewing Your Mind.
It is by the hand of God's providence that kingdoms are established, that rulers are elevated to their positions of power and authority, and it is by the same hand of providence that rulers are dragged down from their throne.
Welcome to the Friday edition of Renewing Your Mind. I'm Lee Webb. This week, Dr. R.C. Sproul has been presenting portions of his series on providence. The title of today's lesson, God's Kingly Providence. As we'll hear, God says that He is the one who raises kings. He's also the one who deposes them. God's purposes will be done, even in government. This is a timely study. A new president is just 1 week into his administration, and many observers believe this country is more divided than ever along political and cultural lines. We won't be sharing all 15 lessons from this series, but we are making them available in a 5-CD set. I'll let you know how you can request a copy at the end of the program. For now, let's get started by Dr. Sproul in the classroom.
The providence of God extends to God's government of governments. In the New Testament, when Christ is exalted to the right hand of God, He is given the title, the Lord of Lords and the King of Kings. Now, in the one sense, that title is simply an ancient way of expressing the superlative degree. To be the Lord of Lords or the King of the Kings means to be the greatest, most majestic Lord and greatest and most powerful King ever. But there's also a literal meaning behind that. When Christ is exalted to the right hand of God and enthroned in the seat of cosmic authority, He is installed as the King over all other kings. The Lord over all other lords, exercising a position of power that the Father has always had. God has always reigned over earthly kings, earthly nations, earthly governments. And the Scriptures tell us repeatedly that God's providential sovereign authority reigns over nations and over political structures to such a degree that it is by the hand of God's providence that kingdoms are established, that rulers are elevated to their positions of power and authority, and it is by the same hand of providence that empires collapse, kingdoms disintegrate, and rulers are dragged down from their throne. As Mary in her Magnificat declared that God scatters the strong with His arm. Now in the ancient world, one of the mightiest empires that ever emerged before the Roman Empire, before the empire that was Greece, was the Babylonian Empire. Babylon the Great. The great city wherein the king and his forces resided. The city of Babylon itself was one of the wonders of the ancient world. Its walls were so high and so thick that there was no machine, no weapon known to man in that day that could penetrate those walls. It was a virtual citadel of strength. Now, the great contender to the world power of Babylon in that day was the Persian nation, the Medo-Persian Empire. But for all intents and purposes, it seemed to the Persians, it seemed to the whole world, and certainly to the Babylonians, that there was no way that Babylon the Great could be captured or destroyed. You know, in ancient warfare, it was customary for strategic cities and towns to defend themselves with a wall in order to prevent the attack or the invasion of hostile forces. And when such armies did move against a city that was walled, they had different tactics that they would employ to try to overcome the inhabitants of the city. We remember the Roman forces and machinery and equipment that they used, the great battering rams and the machinery that they used to hoist and to fire their battering rams against the gates of a city. And they would just continue to pummel the outer gates with these huge battering rams until the gates would disintegrate and the army could march in. Or their archers could use the tactic of standing in a distance and shooting their arrows over the wall, sometimes with fire arrows and so on. Or ladders were established, catapults, towers that were rolled up to the walls so that the soldiers could climb to the towers and over the wall into the enemy territory. Think of it. You're the commander of an army that comes against a walled city. What are your options? You know you can't invite the hostile forces to come outside of their citadel and engage you there in the open spaces. If you want to invade the city, you have to get past the wall. You either have to go over it, go through it, or go around it. But the walls of Babylon were so high and so thick that there was no way to go over it, there was no way to go around it, and there was no way to go through it. And so for all intents and purposes, Babylon was impregnable. Well, what about the most common tactic in situations like this in the ancient world? The siege. We remember the annals of Josephus, who records for us the macabre circumstances of the protracted siege by the Roman armies under Pompey of Jerusalem. In the siege, it's a waiting game where the forces camp around the walled city, where they have access to foodstuffs and provisions and water, where they just simply outwait the inhabitants of the city until they run out of food or run out of water and are forced to come out or die. In the record of Josephus with the destruction of Jerusalem in 70 AD, we read horrible accounts of human cannibalism, where mothers, in order to survive, began to eat their own offspring. So wretched were the conditions of starvation. But there was no hope for the Persians to conquer Babylon by siege. Because not only was Babylon, with its walls so high and so thick, impregnable from an attack from the outside, but it was the largest city of the ancient world, and its foodstuffs were enormous in their supply. So much food, so much water did they have that they could outlast any army that would come and try to wear them out by siege. So the town was secure. And it was in this context that the king of Babylon held a party. Belshazzar the king called a holiday feast, which Daniel describes for us in the 5th chapter of his book. Daniel records it in this fashion. Belshazzar the king held a great feast for 1,000 of his nobles, and he was drinking wine in the presence of the 1,000. This is a gala party. The wine was flowing. Some looked at it as a kind of Roman bacchanalia, that it was an orgy of sorts. But Belshazzar was letting his hair down, having a grand old time because he didn't have anything to worry about. His empire was secure. And when Belshazzar tasted the wine, Daniel says, He gave orders to bring the gold and the silver vessels which Nebuchadnezzar, his father, had taken out of the temple which was in Jerusalem, in order that the king and his nobles, his wives and his concubines might drink from them. There are some indications in this story that this feast had religious overtones, that part of the revelry, part of the bacchanalia of this day, and incidentally the term bacchanalia back in Roman culture came from a religious celebration of Bacchus, the god of the vine, and the people would get intoxicated from their much drinking, and in their drunken stupor would have all of their inhibitions removed from them so that they would give themselves over to total licentiousness in this kind of drunken stupor that they equated with a kind of religious ecstasy. Ecstasy in devotion to the god Bacchus or Dionysius, who allowed them to let loose into a frenzy of orgiastic proportions. Perhaps this was the kind of feast that Belshazzar put on for his nobles and his princes and his people. And in the midst of this pagan orgy, he issued a command. He commanded that the sacred vessels that his father Nebuchadnezzar had plundered from the temple in Jerusalem, from the holy hill of Zion, at the time that Jerusalem fell in 586 BC, when the Babylonians had conquered the nation of Israel and had delivered the most ghastly blow to the people of Israel when they desecrated the temple and took as part of their spoil of war the sacred, the holy, the consecrated vessels that were the vessels of God from the temple. And now this pagan king takes the most sacred vessels that had ever existed on this planet, takes them out of storage, takes them out of the treasury, and now uses them as articles for his own pagan feast. Friends, this was an act of total defiance to the living God. And so they brought the gold vessels that had been taken out of the temple, the house of God, which was in Jerusalem. And the king and his nobles, his wives and his concubines drank from them. And they drank the wine, Daniel tells us, and praised the gods of gold, of silver, of bronze, iron, wood, and stone. With the vessels of God, they made their laudatory prayers, sang their hymns to gods of gold and of silver and of other material things. Beloved, this is rank idolatry. But then suddenly, Daniel tells us, in the midst of this orgy, in the midst of this desecration, in the midst of this blasphemous, uninhibited exercise in hedonism, suddenly, Daniel tells us, the fingers of a man's hand emerged and began writing opposite the lampstand on the plaster of the wall of the king's palace. And the king saw the back of the hand that did the writing. Then, as Daniel describes it, the king's face grew pale, and his thoughts alarmed him, and his hip joints went slack, and his knees began knocking together. What a graphic, vivid description of the onset of unmitigated terror. Here is the mightiest man in the world in the midst of a joyous and glad feast. Suddenly, Scripture says, everything changed. The ambiance of the feast was shattered. The joviality was pierced when suddenly the king saw a hand. Nothing attached to it, no arm, no human shoulder, no human body. He saw a hand. And the hand began to write upon the wall. And Daniel says that Belshazzar, probably warm and red in the face from all of his corpulence and from all of his imbibing, instantly turned white as a sheet. He went pale. He began to tremble. His knees began to knock. Have you ever seen somebody like that? Has that ever happened to you? Have you ever been so frightened in a situation in your life that you simply could not control the involuntary spasms of your own body? Frequently, I'll be in the chancel of a church before I have to speak, and somebody who's not accustomed to speaking or to singing will come up to the pulpit and deliver a brief message, and their bodies will be shielded from the congregation by the presence of the pulpit. But if I'm sitting behind them, I can see their legs. And it's not an all uncommon thing for me to watch somebody speaking in front of me when their legs are twitching a mile a minute and their knees start knocking together. But that's nothing compared to the terror Belshazzar experienced. His thoughts alarmed him. His hip joints went slack. His knees began knocking together. And so the king called aloud to bring in the conjurers, the Chaldeans, the diviners. He's calling for the clergy. I need a minister here. He's calling for the magician. Get me the medicine man. Get me somebody who can come in here and get me out of this terror. And so the king spoke and said to the wise men of Babylon, anyone who can read this inscription and explain its interpretation to me will be clothed with purple and have a necklace of gold around his neck and have authority as the third ruler in the kingdom. The king, Belshazzar, has a problem. Problem like he's never had in his whole life. And he's desperate for a solution, desperate to get this terror that has him frozen removed, this alarm that has gripped his mind and his thoughts taken away. So he puts the incentive before the best people he has for help. I'll give you wealth. I'll give you power. You write your own ticket. I'll write any figure on the check that you want. Just tell me what's going on here and what this means. And all the king's men came in, but they couldn't read the inscription or make known its interpretation. So we read that then King Belshazzar was greatly alarmed. His face grew even paler and his nobles were perplexed. And at that moment, the queen entered. And the queen said, O king, live forever. Which didn't seem very likely to Belshazzar at that moment. Don't let your thoughts alarm you. And you know what happened. When all of the men of Babylon failed to relieve the king's fears, they remembered a Jewish exile whose name was Daniel. And Daniel was brought into the great hall of the feast and of the king. And the same promise is given to Daniel by Belshazzar. I will give you purple and gold, and you will have the authority as the third ruler in the kingdom. Daniel said, keep those gifts to yourself. Give your rewards to someone else. However, I will read the inscription. Daniel said to the king, you have exalted yourself against the Lord of heaven. You have desecrated the sacred vessels of Israel.
But the God in whose hand are your life, breath, and your ways, you have not glorified. And this hand was sent from him, and this inscription was written out. Now, O king, look at the inscription, hear the words, read the handwriting on the wall. Now, this is the inscription. Mene, Mene, Tekel, Apharsin. Daniel said, this is the interpretation of the message. Mene, God has numbered your kingdom and put an end to it. Do you hear me, Belshazzar? Your days are numbered. The days of your kingdom are numbered. And that number is in the hands of God. And that number has come up. It's over. Tekel, you have been weighed on the scales and found wanting. Peres, your kingdom has been divided and given over to the Medes and the Persians. And so Belshazzar gave orders, and they clothed Daniel with purple, put a necklace of gold. Perhaps he was desperately trying to assuage the wrath of this God that Daniel had announced by heaping all of this reward and all of this praise on the emissary of God himself, which emissary had no desire for this reward. And while this was happening, the general of the Persians, according to Xenophon, Josephus, and Herodotus, didn't try to go around the wall, didn't try to go over the wall, didn't try to go through the wall of Babylon, but they built a dam in the middle of the night and diverted the river Euphrates so that the cavity by which the water that had come out of the city flowed outside underneath the walls into the river was now exposed. And in the middle of the night, like the Trojan army that came into the city out of the hidden horse, so the troops of the Persians marched in the dry riverbed right underneath the wall. And in that night was Belshazzar, king of the Chaldeans, slain.
A familiar story from God's Word. It was God's hand that deposed Belshazzar. You're listening to Renewing Your Mind with Dr. R.C. Sproul, and we've been sharing highlights from his series, Providence, God in Control. Inevitably, in the middle of difficulty or tragedy, there's always a question of God's goodness. How does he allow these things to happen? R.C. addresses that and other important questions in this series. This week, when you contact us and request the 5-disc series, we'll also include a crucial questions booklet by Dr. Sproul titled, Does God Control Everything? If you know someone who's facing difficult days, this might be a great resource to pass along to them. For your gift of any amount today, we will send you both Dr. Sproul's audio series and the booklet when you call us at 800-435-4343 or when you make your request and give your donation online at renewingyourmind.org. Dr. Sproul taught this series in 15 lessons, each one about 25 minutes long. It's a great series for a Sunday school class at your church or a small group in your home. For your gift of any amount, we'll be glad to send it your way. It's a 5-CD set along with a booklet by Dr. Sproul, Does God Control Everything? Again, our number is 800-435-4343, and our web address is renewingyourmind.org. Our goal at Ligonier is to equip Christians to understand the faith and effectively share it with others. One way to do that is through Ligonier Connect. It's an online discipleship community that right now has more than 15,000 users. For $9 per month, Ligonier Connect gives you the opportunity to access more than 70 interactive courses from Dr. Sproul, Sinclair Ferguson, Stephen Lawson, and many others. You can find out more by going to connect.ligonier.org. Before we go today, Dr. Sproul has another thought for us on the sovereignty of God.
In our Coram Deo thought for today, let me ask you, in what you place your confidence for your safety? It's been the lot of mankind to look at his military weapons, his armies, his alliances with other nations, his friendships, his network, as the basis of human security. One of the lessons we must take away from this story of the providence of God as God visited Belshazzar in Babylon was that Belshazzar made the fatal mistake that was made throughout Old Testament days and even down to today. He placed his confidence in his military power and in the security of the walls that protected his city. And in the midst of his ease and celebration, he saw the handwriting on the wall. Beloved, I pray that you may never have to see that hand written large against you. Your trust and your confidence must be in God and not in the power structures of this world.
Now, we so appreciate Dr. Sproul teaching this series on the providence of God, and we hope it's been an encouragement to you. Well, next week here on Renewing Your Mind, our friend and Ligonier Teaching Fellow, Dr. Derek Thomas, joins us with more from his popular series on the Pilgrim's Progress. We hope you'll join us Monday.